Welcome to the Wild Rose Moon Radio Hour.
In every life, some rain must fall, and you'll get wet as your sorrow calls. Oh, the sun will rise on a brand new morn. You'll be warm and dry and freshly born.
With support from Judith Robert and in the memory of our good friend Tom Kepaczynskis, and with additional support from Marshall County Community Foundation, the First Source Bank, and the Indiana Arts Commission, and Mike and Cindy Boner. From historic downtown Plymouth, Indiana, where the Lincoln Highway and Michigan Road cross the banks of the beautiful Yellow River, it's the Wild Rose Moon Radio Hour! Tonight's show is brought to you as a tribute to the joys of solitude. For many, the experience of solitude can be the mental state that holds the key to developing a lifetime of creative work, functioning a bit like the Big Bang at the beginning of the universe. One's first experience of solitude can explode into a marvelous sense of unity with the entire cosmos. To quote William Wordsworth, "I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way. They stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance." And speaking of the sprightly dance of creativity, we have with us today all the way from New York City two amazing musicians, John Ragusa and Hugh Poole. They combine the spirits of the wind and flutes with the majesty and grittiness of the slide guitar to create a jazzy Delta blues that will move your molecules. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome the creative nexus they call Mulebone. Also tonight, we'll have a song from a local musician from South Bend, David Jameson. David will be performing an original song accompanied by our own Matt Scutchfield. In addition, we'll be reintroducing our game show, Shoot the Moon, involving two extremely fortunate members of our studio audience. And now, recorded live from the Wild Rose Moon Performing Arts Center in historic downtown Plymouth, Indiana, where the Art Deco Reese Theater is soon to enjoy its second lifetime of excitement and inspiration for the benefit of the local and regional community, here is the radical rascal of all things lunar, or lunatic, your radio hour host, George Schricker!
The river goes round, round the bend. The river goes round, round, round to the very end. And when it stops, it starts again. It won't be long till the river goes round. It won't be long till the river goes round
and round and round. Well, thank you so much. It's great to be back for another Wild Rose Moon Radio Hour. And Jacob, it's so good to have you with us today.
It's good to see you too, George.
And I love that shirt, man. You've got the spirit of summer right there with
thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you. I like your shirt as well.
Well, thank you. And have you been dancing? The number one question I wanted to ask. Are you a dancer?
No, but I do it anyway.
Oh, good, good. Same here. Yeah. It's exactly the same thing. Anyway, it's so great to have you. And we are so lucky today because we have people all the way from New York City. And it's a lovely. When anybody comes from New York, we just try to bask in the light. And so great. John Ragusa and Hugh Poole, thank you so much for coming to Wild Rose Moon Radio.
Thank you.
And I'm standing in the blue spot where I'm not supposed to stand. So tell us, you both have interesting stories. I've been reading about Hughes, and you have your own studio in Brooklyn and in
Greenpoint
Brooklyn,
area. North Brooklyn.
Which isn't that far from the Heights.
A few miles.
Yeah,
miles. Greenpoint is the northernmost community in Brooklyn, right up against the Newtown Creek, and then Queens is after that.
Yeah, I had I lived for about a year in the Heights.
Oh, did you?
Not in the Heights, but down from the Heights.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
On State Street.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, so it was great. But tell me about your studio.
It's a recording studio that I I became a partner in 23 years ago or something more than that, actually. And then we made a lot of records there. It's called Accello Recording.
Right.
Stuff over the last couple, maybe last decade in North Brooklyn has changed a great deal. People had houses that were worth $300,000 and they went to like $2 million.
Oh, yeah.
It just went so crazy. And so the studio we had in a warehouse for a long time, and then the warehouse became so valuable that the owners tore it down and turned it into luxury condominiums. And so we had a good relationship with them, but we had to move. And so relocating was hard because in that real estate climate, it was hard to relocate.
Man.
But we did. And so it lives in a new location.
And you do a lot of analog stuff with the 2-inch tape.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was reading
splicing
all about that.
Splicing razor blades and China markers and 2-inch tape. We have computers and all that stuff too, but everybody that I've trained there and the way that I learned, everybody knows how to use a tape machine and align it and do azimuth and splice with a razor blade.
Wow, well, I did that years ago.
Oh, did you?
But not in 2-inch,
quarter inch.
Yeah.
That's a cool skill.
Yeah, it's a great skill. Yeah. And you've worked with a lot of great people. Did I see that somebody Wainwright came through your studio?
Oh, by both of them. I mean, not Loudon, but both of his kids, Martha and,
Lucy?
What's the kid's name? What's the boy's name?
Rufus.
Rufus,
yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about him last night.
That's right. Does my bum look good in these jeans?
Yeah.
is what he asked me, and I was like, okay, sure.
Okay. He's worked with everybody from Debbie Harry to Taj Mahal
we've
had a lot of people.
Bunch of great, great musicians through the years.
Well, that is really exciting. And I saw you played on stage with a lot of people. Did you open or were you playing around with Canned Heat at some point?
I did a show with them in I played right before them at a big festival in Europe a few years ago, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, and John, tell me a little about yourself. You were a flautist?
You can call me a flautist, but most people call me a flutist. But I don't care.
And can you tell me just exactly when did you start playing flute?
Well, I taught myself the flute when I was in high school, and I was a trumpet player, and I went to college for the trumpet. But I taught myself how to play the flute. The first song I ever played was a tune off of Jethro Tull's stand-up record. So everywhere I go, people ask me to play Jethro Tull. And at this point, all I have to do is just lift up a leg and play. No matter what I play, if I do this, they're happy. The first tune I played actually was a remake that he did of a Bach Bore called Bore. I taught myself. I went to music school. I dropped out of music school to join the peace movement. I spent like 10 years out of a backpack and doing all sorts of kind of interesting stuff to try to, you know, do my part.
Yeah.
And when I went back to school, I went back for the flute. So I became a flute major at you know, 28 or 30 years old at an undergraduate school.
Wow.
I joined the women's swim team. I was a token male. It was great. And the first teacher I had, who happened to be an absolute genius, brilliant teacher under the tutelage of Julius Baker, who's one of the great famous, probably one of the truly great classical teachers of the 20th century. The first thing she said was, wow, I really like your sound. I like how you play. It's going to take you about 2 years to unlearn all the mistakes you've learned. And I put the time in.
Wow, is that great?
So that's where I'm at now. And, you know, now I'm feeling like, oh, I think I know how to, you know, at least start to play this.
Well, will you both cut loose with something right now? Something?
We happen to. Absolutely.
For a place to sign my name. Well, I'm a million miles from nowhere, looking for a place to sign my name. You know, I know there's nothing to put my cool in this game. Then I found me a woman, looking for a place to sign my name. summer night. So in the eyes of God and man, my glove would have honor and aim. Come out of the distance and come back with your checkbook and your pen.
Man, you're waking me up now. You're waking me up. All right. That's great. Why the slide guitar?
I found this. I was at one of the first things, funny thing, when I moved to New York, one of the first tours that I ever did that was like got in a van was actually after I moved to New York. And like the first gig was in my hometown, which is outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Right.
So because of course we could book something. That's how we got it started, was by going back, and we were just going out for a couple of weeks in a Chevy Chevette with a trunk on the thing and on the roof with the gear in it. Anyway, and I was 20, and the first night the amp I had was using broke, and so I woke up in the morning and I was like, I got to get it fixed. And there was a place called Pizza Electronics. I'd never heard of it before. It was in Bellevue. They were open. I drove the amp out there. I explained that I had to play that night. The guy said, people that know, it's like knowing an old car. You don't need you don't need to get the manual out. It's like, yeah. Well, and he said, yeah, come back at 5:00. And I came back at 5:00 and the shop was in the guy's house. And as I was walking out, this guitar was hanging on a bench. His wife was cooking dinner. The TV was on. And I was walking out of the house and this guitar had just come back from an auto body shop. It was painted gray and it was hanging there looking kind of new. I knew it wasn't. And I said, what's the deal with that guitar? And he said, And I said, is it for sale? I said, yeah, $200. And I had like $60 and I gave it to him. And then I borrowed the rest of the money from my sister and came back with a hefty garbage bag and stuck it in there and walked out in the rain with the guitar. And I had no idea really about anything. I just thought it was cool.
Wow.
And but then, of course, then I became acquainted with, I'd seen pictures and stuff. I knew what it was, but I had really had no idea. It just became part of me. This one's from 34. I have a few of them now, but this one's from 34.
1934.
Yeah.
Wow. And so when you first, I read in your bio that you didn't necessarily listen to this slide blues.
When
you were in Pittsburgh, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I was always into I'm the youngest, so I have a sister that's 10 years older and a brother that's dead, but whatever. He was 8 years older. And so I was hearing like Allman Brothers stuff I was a little bit too young for, but I was hearing it in the house. And so I just always kind of caught into this feeling of these songs that were, and then all of a sudden later on, the Grateful Dead. And, and then all of a sudden I was like, well, why is the band, the Allman Brothers and the Grateful Dead and this other band, Hot Tuna, why are they all doing the same song? And who in God's name is McKinley Morganfield or Chester Burnett or whatever? Yeah. And so then I was like, I realized that there was this, I grew up on a farm, man. It wasn't like something that was going to jump out in my way, the world of blues music. But when I discovered it, I was like, oh, damn. And so then I just gravitated towards people that were into it, and I'd go people's through, you know, I carried, when I was traveling, I carried a box of blank cassettes with me, and if I was ever at somebody's house, people would be partying or whatever, and I'd be in, going through the record collection, and if I found like a anything blues related, I'd put the tape on and like, hey man, cool, drinking up, great. I'd record the record while I was there, and so then I just built up a big tape collection of stuff.
That's great. You just a process of falling in love.
Slowly
falling in love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk to John a little bit about, because I play just a little bit of bamboo flute, which a transverse bamboo flute from China, and I find it so. Actually, I learned to play in Brooklyn, because I, being a small town boy and transplanted to an area that was being gentrified, and I came from a very, you know, protected sort of background, and here I was in Brooklyn, and I was surrounded by a multicultural world for the first time in my life, really, and I was scared. Because it was a scary time. It was during Son of Sam.
76.
Remember that time?
Yeah.
So, but Bob Dylan's Desire had come out, and it was a gritty kind of time, and scary things happened all around me.
And
I was trying to adjust to that, and the reason I picked up a flute was because it calmed me.
Beautiful.
It just like, you know, it controls your breath. And I wanted to ask about that in terms of your breathing and a wind instrument. It seems to me like that's very connected to kind of, meditative states and interesting sorts of exploration in that.
Yeah, I can get with that completely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You build up your technique and your breathing, capacity. I have been a swimmer off and on most of my life, and the swimming at one point was very meditative and, very just a place of concentration, and the breathing is so central to that. And at that point, actually, when I mentioned the swim team in college, I was taking the lessons with this great teacher whose name was Wendy Stern. Shout out to her, because she's a genius. And it was very consciously a connection at that point. The learning, the proper technique on the flute and breathing and the swimming. I remember just getting into the groove, swimming like swimming a mile, like without even having. It's really truly getting like into a place of meditation.
Right.
And I mean, I've been off and on meditating all my life too. But that's a great connection. And speaking of wood flutes, you'll see I have a collection of them, including quite a few from India, quite a few American bamboo flutes, some fifes that are kind of like the vibe of like the Mississippi, fife and drum corps, hill bands, that kind of thing. And some very crude ones. And some of my favorites are the crude ones, because they're not necessarily perfectly in tune. They're not necessarily, of a refined instrument, but you find some character and you've got it, and you have to kind of meet it where it's at and play something that's totally itself, totally unique. So I enjoy all sorts of flutes. I love Native American flutes. I don't play them with our duo, really. I mean, at some point I want to record something with, but I think it would work well. But so a big yes to your
that's
insight.
Great. Well, give us another one, will you?
All right.
New morning. morning in my new morning in my heart. Yeah, and I've got problems as old as the hills, seeing saints and demons and drinking from their still. But I got a new morning, new morning in my new morning in my heart. Got a ghost walking, a ghost talking in my ghost walking in my dreams. A ghost walking, a ghost talking in my ghost walking in my dreams. Yeah, he's creaking down this hallway, dropping seeds of bliss that bloom into life lessons with the water from your kiss. But I got a new morning, a new morning in my new morning in my heart. A nest riding on my nest riding on my back. And when there's a change in the winds and the rains don't come, I see the smiling faces of my daughter and my son. But I got a new morning, a new morning in my new morning in my heart. New morning, morning in my new morning in my heart.
So fine, so fine. Well, we're going to be back with John Ragusa and Hugh Poole. And up next, we'll have David Jamison's going to come up and share a song with us. And take us away, Matt.
With support from Judith Robert and in memory of our dear friend Tom Kepazinskis, and from the generosity of the Marshall County Community Foundation, the First Source Bank, Mike and Cindy Boner, and the Indiana Arts Commission, you're listening to the Wild Rose Moon Radio Hour.